All right, we are here at 203 Kombucha, which is here in Palmer, Alaska. Some really cool setup, but we're here with David, and we're going to let him kind of introduce himself and tell us what he got going on down here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. We're sitting in what we call the Kombuchery. It's a sort of a bar-style tap room, but open back with fermenters and bright tanks and equipment kind of visible. We wanted to have kind of an industrial brewery feel, but one where because we don't serve alcohol, the kids and families can come in here without a problem. But yeah, we started making kombucha in late 2017 as a business under 203 Kombucha. I've been doing it just for a few years prior to that. I came up to Alaska just over 2 years ago, I guess that would be. I was coming from California, had a job, worked as an engineer, and wanted a different life. So like many people, I just sort of packed up the car, quit the job, and came on up and started 203 Kombucha from a dry cabin in Sutton. And after, a pretty quick response from farmers markets, I upgraded and bought bigger equipment, and that's where we are today. We're kind of a 80% retail. We got a pretty solid 20% or so wholesale business everywhere from, Anchorage, anywhere up to Fairbanks even at times. So the tap room is kind of our main focus here, and we just want to have a good time here.
All right. Excellent. And now I know we've talked to another kombucha place, but if you want to just kind of give us the quick rundown for people that might not have listened to that one. Just kind of what kombucha is and what benefits it has for you.
Yeah, the quick version is it's a fermented probiotic tea drink. So all kombucha starts with some sort of base. I say tea because most of it's made with the actual tea plant, green tea, black tea, white tea. We also have some that are made with red tea. Some that are made with yerba mate. You can make it out of other things as well, but we focus on keeping those as tea bases, and then we ferment it from anywhere, usually 3-ish weeks, maybe sometimes 4 when it's a little colder out. And during that fermentation process, yeast and bacteria eat the tea nutrients and produce different types of acids and some carbon dioxide. And what you get in the final product is a fizzy, slightly tangy, flavored probiotic drink that's supposed to help with body pH as well as gut biome.
Yeah, I can say this is my first time actually drinking kombucha, and I have so far sampled the beet, carrot, ginger, and lemon cayenne ginger, and it tastes nothing like I thought it would. I've always heard it has like kind of a real musky, kind of tangy taste to it. It's an acquired taste, I've heard a lot, and I can honestly say this is pretty damn good.
Yeah, we get a lot of traffic that comes in thinking it's a bar because it does look like a bar. We use similar equipment to a local brewery. We have the final product is delivered on draft through kegs, just like a bar. Sometimes it's a little bit of an eye-opener when I say we're not a bar and I offer that drink to whoever's in here. And it is an interesting taste. I would say it's not acquired in that, like, sometimes it is good right off the bat. We do second ferment them with a variety of different fruits and vegetables. So the beet, carrot, ginger one you were trying, we use local organic beets and local organic carrots, and we juice everything here. And what you get is a very true to taste beet ginger flavor. So yeah, if you really, really don't like beets, you may not like it, but I still think even the people that are not big beet lovers tend to say it's got a good flavor. So that is a good one.
That would be me. I am not a beet person. Even though I've been in the kitchen for 10 years, I still have the palate of a 5-year-old when it comes to vegetables. That one was really good, and I'm going to try one here, the hibiscus lime.
Yeah, so with each flavor, you can we've selected a specific tea base for that flavor. So the hibiscus lime is made with an organic English breakfast. It's not always possible up here, but in products like the kombucha, it's exceptionally it's extra important that you use organic products. We've got organic teas, organic sugars, organic fruits and vegetables, and seasonal is great too. Things that are local, like the beets and the carrots. We've also, our number one seller is this rooibos rhubarb. So it's a red tea, and we use local rhubarb that we just grind up, squeeze, and add to the fermenter. So you get a very, it's an Alaskan favorite. I mean, rhubarb is, before I moved up here to Alaska, I rarely saw rhubarb outside of like a really sweet pie with, you know, tons of strawberries and stuff. But up here, rhubarb is sort of a staple vegetable. So I'm trying to really incorporate that in stuff, and it seems to be doing well.
Yeah, I just tried the rhubarb as we were talking about it. It's a nice kind of light flavor. It's not overpowering. And honestly, I could drink this just like a soda. I mean, it has that natural sweetness to it.
Yeah, it's got the sweetness is very based on how long you let it ferment and your initial, you know, but we follow a pretty standard recipe. Most kombucha breweries or kombucha people at home, it's kind of a standard recipe, you know, a gallon of tea, a gallon of water, a cup of sugar, and, you know, approximately a normal strength tea. You scale that recipe pretty well. It gets a little tougher with the pH controls and temperature controls in the vats that we have at this size. But we've spent some time researching, and for now, it's coming out pretty good. It's still a taste. You know, it's done when it tastes right, kind of thing. That's how we're doing it. But
so now, but you mentioned you use a lot of local organic vegetables and fruits for your flavors. Now, how important is staying organic, staying sustainable to Alaska to you guys?
It's incredibly important. I mean, there's enough farmers around here that can source you with the right stuff. Now there's a little bit of a, you know, my personal feelings about how to further, I guess, have the smallest impact, negative impact. You know, if you have organic strawberries that are shipped up here from Chile versus getting them from down the road, we would default to getting local. So my priority is local, and then just below that is organic. So I'd rather have, if the beets or the carrots, our beets and carrots are always organic, but rhubarb, for instance, we get it from Bush's Bunches down the road here, right? His stuff is not always organic, but to buy organic stuff from out of state is obviously going to be a bigger environmental impact than getting it from down the road. In addition to that, from what the many conversations I've had with the Alaska farmers around here, just the climate in Alaska and the soil and the need to use excessive pesticides and herbicides is just so much smaller. It's a lot less prevalent than when you might see in California. So the soil is better, the sun is better. It's not as necessary to use these incredible pesticides. There's not the pests that you have in California. So to say something is not organic doesn't mean that, you know, the farmers are dipping it in the gross chemicals. It's a very natural farming kind of state. So it is important to get fresh juices in there. If you use a concentrate or a flavoring, it's not going to taste as good. It's not going to have the same kind of vitamins. It's not going to have the same mouthfeel. It's just different. You know, artificial flavoring or even just concentrates, it just doesn't deliver the final product the way we want to have it. So
let's say it's like taking a can of orange juice compared to a fresh squeezed,
correct, yeah,
orange juice. Now, I know I heard about you guys from another local business that does events with you. I know community is a very big thing for you guys. So if you want to kind of just let our listeners know about some of the awesome events and community things you do here.
Yeah, it's really been interesting because kombucha is what we make here. We are branching into the coffee world a little bit too. But the response I've seen over the past year has been mostly well, they enjoy the product. Certainly, it seems like I'm getting feedback that they're glad that we're serving kombucha. But the community is also just excited to have a new community space to utilize. So what we've kind of done is help let them decide what we can do with this space. So what that's looked like so far has been a community events style calendar where we have Wednesdays, for instance, we have a trivia night and people can come out with their families and friends and kind of play a medium to sometimes highly competitive trivia for an hour or so. We've got open mic on Friday that has been primarily, you know, singer-songwriter opportunities, but we've seen some really interesting nights with poets and writers and comedians that are very local that just wanted a new place to go and kind of just try their material. We have an interesting rotation of what we call the art corner over here to my right. There's plenty of art in Alaska, and putting it up on the walls in your space is a good way for artists to get something seen. What we wanted to do with a different twist is not just have a rotating art on the wall, but instead to dedicate a space or a wall, in our case, a corner here, and ask the artist to make the work here in the space. We're on our fourth artist, and by making it in the space during hours that we're open, there's a lot of fun interaction between the artist and just our normal customers. And it helps people understand the value of art. And then what we do is have a big art party night, like a kind of like a, I mean, almost like an art opening if you were going to, you know, LA or something. Okay. And we sell raffle tickets, and maybe for $5 or $10 you get a ticket, and then we just raffle off the art. And what's happened is that the artist sees more revenue, everything goes to them, and then you might go home with a piece of art having only spent $10. So it's sort of a win-win because the goal is to get artists some cash so they can keep doing what they love to do, but also to just help everybody elevate, you know, their experience, maybe their house, by just putting a nice piece of art up. So maybe you win, and if you don't, it's only $10. So it's not, it's a fun loss. It's a, if you don't win, it's kind of a, you still know you supported them. So the art corner is a great, has been a really great experience. And then, I mean, I get calls every week for weddings or receptions or birthday parties. We're actually going to be the meeting spot for the Women's March on Saturday at 9. But basically, the space is kind of here to use, and we haven't said no yet. So we're just asking for ideas, and anything that you want to do, we're trying to find a way to work it out.
That's awesome to see you take something that you're passionate about and to be able to allow other people to come in and kind of show what they're passionate about, too, because I know Palmer, it's a growing community, but it's still kind of a small community. So it's kind of cool to see somebody come in and kind of open up people's eyes and ideas to other events. Now, do you guys have anything coming up here in the near future?
We do.
That you'd like to share?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in addition to consistently every Wednesday and every Friday, we have Wednesday trivia nights starts at 6 o'clock, and Friday open mic starts at 5 o'clock. We are hosting the Women's March this Saturday, or hosting, that's a stretch, right? We're the meeting spot. We want to help facilitate this, and that's a great example of something that, you know, they came to us and said, we want a nice place to stay warm, have a cup of coffee or a kombucha before we do our thing. And I think it's great. So we're here to support them. So that's this Saturday. We're going to start gathering about 9:15. The other big thing I wanted to kind of plug today is on February 1st, we are having our one-year anniversary party. We opened this place 1 year ago on February 1st. So we're adding hours. Our hours are going to be 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday. So on February 1st, we are going to have our espresso machine has been tested and it's up and running. So we're going to have, as far as I know, first in the valley, oat milk lattes, and Americanos and Italian Doppios, and no flavorings. Just, we have these three classic Italian coffee offerings, and we're going to increase our toast menu. So we have avocado toast at the moment, really fun little snack. And then we're going to add cinnamon sugar toast and an almond butter and preserve toast. And, you know, trying to keep our prices reasonable so, you know, kids after school can come get a kombucha and a toast. But on the first, we're going to be offering samples and free tastings of all this stuff. So basically come by anytime between 11 and 8 p.m. on February 1st. We're going to have great music in the evening. We might have some other kind of fun surprises too. So you don't want to miss that.
Now, you were talking about expanding into the coffee. Before we started, you gave me a sample of the Nitro cold brew coffee, which is really good. I mean, I'm one of those people, I take 5% coffee to 65% creamer, and that was, it needed no cream. What kind of got you guys started in bringing new coffees and styles up here compared to, I can go down the road and get a latte from the 555 coffee shacks in a mile.
Yeah, so it's fun, right? There's a lot of options, but there's always something missing. So in our case, the coffee shop in town here, the sit-down coffee shop, doesn't have nitro cold brew coffee. In fact, I couldn't find one in a shop or even a drive-thru around here. So we have all the equipment. We have kegging. We have taps. And nitro cold brew coffee is like an amazing summer coffee. So this past summer, I work with Ethereal Coffee. It's a local coffee roaster in town here, again, for organic fair trade coffee. Because we had the equipment, we wanted to just give it a try. And sure enough, because there wasn't a place to go get it, it's just kind of got crazy. And it is a fun way to serve coffee. It fits with the draft experience, the draft style. We are a sort of in-house coffee shop. We are not going to carry any paper to-go cups. We've got no plastic to-go cups. If you want to take kombucha to-go, we have the growler, howler, refill option, which is a good one. And for the coffee, it's the same thing. You're going to get it in a mug for here. And if you wanted to take it to-go, you've got to bring one in. We're going to have a few, you know, branded reusable coffee mugs, but we're going to, as much as possible, it's going to be a no paper, no plastic kind of place. So that's what makes us different. It's going to be a sit-down coffee place. That's the goal.
Yeah, I was just kind of noticed that as I was kind of looking around here. Yeah, everything's served in glass, which I personally believe is the right way to go, with especially being up here in Alaska. We're definitely seeing, not to get political, but we're seeing the effects of climate change. In this last couple years, I know this summer we're hitting 90 degrees on the train. It was crazy. And living so close to the water, we see the effects of plastic. So I think that's amazing to see a small local business take a stand.
Yeah, it's really
kind of going that way.
It's just, you know, every individual has a responsibility to just not be wasteful. Some of it, you can think about it everywhere from maybe it's a global warming issue to you. To me, it's a lot of things. Some of it is just efficiency. I think that it's something we should just not be wasteful. We can do it without it. And the support has been really great. So I want to try to promote that. And then as a business, we have a little bit of a bigger burden because we have a larger impact. If we don't sell paper cups, you might come in here and be a little bit ticked off the first time. But, you know, I could also challenge you to just bring your cup. I know you've got one. Everyone has some travel mug that they got from a giveaway at a radio station or some conference, or they're like a nickel at Bishop's Attic. So just go buy one. They already exist. Let's not make anything new if it already exists. So that'll be pretty interesting to see the response. So far, been pretty good. We're kind of using models similar to like the Muskox Farm. Awesome venue. When they've got a sweet band, actually they got one coming up. Right on their headline, it says, bring your own cup for your beer, you know, and that's really cool. And I love that concept. So we're gonna borrow that for sure.
Excellent. So I just tried this jasmine green, and I've never found a green tea that I can drink. And this is probably all these amazing flavors I've tried. This is probably my favorite one.
The jasmine, that's a good sign. The jasmine one is very natural tasting. It doesn't have a second ferment. It's basically just the base tea. So it's a little trickier to get the final thing dialed in because we're not dumping in 10 gallons of fresh beet juice to basically yeah, you should take some of that home. The other thing that's kind of interesting, so this is my business. I started it with essentially my own, I guess we call that retirement or whatever. I had a fancy engineering job. I worked at a nuclear power plant for 10 years, and this is what I wanted to do. And since we've opened, I have a new employee who was so interested in the company. It made me really evaluate like wages and, you know, what it's like to be in the service industry and how it can be really rough. And him and I talked it over, and we started what has now become like an employee ownership model. So Brian is now a 10% owner in the company. And from the research I've done, the businesses that I've seen out there that have employee ownership models, just having stake in the game it's really helped our quality go up. You know, him and I are always thinking about the company as our own versus like a little paycheck here or there. So I would like to see other businesses start to explore that. So maybe a different podcast or something, you can find some expertise out there, because I need to know about the next step. But yeah, it's been an interesting experience.
That's a really good point of avenue to look down, because I know myself, being a chef, I've done work for the mom and pop guy, get my paycheck, go out the door, no questions asked. And I've done places where I do have skin in the game.
Yeah.
And it does make a huge difference. And I think besides just the quality product, I think it brings the business out more to the community, because your employees are more likely to go out and tell everybody, hey, come check this out, since they got skin in the game, compared to the guy that just goes home, plops down, plays video games, says, I'll be back in on Monday.
Yeah, and I think that the service industry is a tough one to survive. Brian is in a unique position where, you know, his day-to-day life and his expenses are covered for the most part by one service industry full-time job that, you know, pays, like, this is a tip job, right? You know, people are pretty generous. They'll give you a buck or whatever. So that's been really great. But it's not enough for most people out there. You know,
I am into that.
So we're trying to figure out, you know, how to make it work. And he came up with this concept called thoughtful profitability, which means that it's a balance between how the employee should be paid or the ownership model, but also keeping prices reasonable, because we want customers to be happy. We don't want to get rich off customers. We don't want the employees to get rich off the business. We want everybody to kind of have a shared interest. So it's been a really fun concept. So I'm loving the support from the community on that. So we have so much to do to give back to that, you know?
And I mean, it's one thing here in Alaska, we're world famous for our sky high prices up here. And the prices are not bad at all here. And it's kind of interesting to see when you go down to the lower 48s, the prices of everything, because we get used to it.
Yeah.
Like for us, paying $4 for a gallon of milk really doesn't seem that bad anymore.
Yeah.
Compared to when you go down. So it's really interesting to see how businesses cope with that, especially when we are such a tourist-based economy. Tourists coming up, I'm sure they've got just pure sticker shock.
They can, and you don't want to scare them away. And that's part built into this business model is more, you know, sweat work than there is convenience work. So when something, we have to work together to get it fixed between mostly just me and Brian, and occasionally we have to ask for professional help, obviously, but we're just keeping our expenses down. The business is keeping expenses down, just like I keep my personal expenses down, so I don't need the business to pay off my personal luxuries, right? So it all balances out really well. But there are challenges every businesses deal with up here with Alaska-specific costs. Like we talked a little bit about shipping offline here, but that's a big one. You know, every time I want to get something shipped up here, it's expensive. So we all understand that. I don't want to use it as an excuse, so I'm trying to still, you know, kind of compromise with customers on that.
Now, one thing I always love to ask people in any type of business up here is, I know Alaska's undergoing so much change. Where do you see the next 5 years or so, the big changes coming for you? I know we talked a little bit about the conception that people have Alaska so far behind, but they're so hungry for new stuff. And obviously, kombucha is pretty new up here.
Oh, yeah.
So where do you see kind of the trends or the changes coming in your sector?
I think that food and beverage and entertainment are going to grow and catch up with that trend gap that really is just, it's conceptual. You know, to think that it's not of, you can say things like, it isn't here, as in like, it may not be available to go to a evening cocktail, craft cocktail bar in Palmer. Yeah, you can't do that. But do the people want that? Of course they do. So Alaska is maybe behind because there's been a little lack of businesses taking particularly new risk. You know, a business that has tried and true customers is more promising than a risky type business. This, the landlord had some concerns, never heard the word kombucha. This is, you know, are we going to be able to pay the bill? So I think the younger people are going to start moving up here, and the more people travel to Seattle and Portland, their tastes for, you know, just different quality foods, a variety of foods, drinks, entertainment, they come back with that need. And I think that there's going to be more businesses popping up that are, I don't know, kombucha places, a crafty cocktail bar. You can see the distilleries in Anchorage are kind of, they're kind of twisting that a little bit. So you can go there for really fancy, you know, late afternoon drink. I mean, there's just some new ways that people can eat and drink and have fun that I think if businesses want to take those kinds of risks, which is not even a risk, I mean, I'm all for it. So I think there'll be more people staying around, and Alaska won't become as much of a seasonal work culture, and we'll see how it goes. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing I have noticed even in the few years that I've been up here, because I've only been in Alaska for about 3 years now. Is seeing the new businesses taking the chance of staying year round instead of hitting their summer and then disappearing. And it's amazing to see businesses such as yourself and other ones making Alaska a year round destination compared to come work for the summer, go back somewhere else.
And I have to say just real quickly, it was amazing. I had been, I wouldn't say complaining, but certainly voicing some annoyance that I couldn't find a place that had like a late, early afternoon brunch that was kind of fancy. You can get like a little champagne, orange juice, mimosa. And sure enough, I got a call from the owner of Turkey Red, and she's like, hey, we're having our first brunch. And I went, and it was so great. It felt like a new place, you know, a very specific food menu item that was just perfect for that day. And I don't know. So I think things like that will start to show up more and more, like just kind of higher gourmet quality foods. And I don't know, but we'll see. So bounce your ideas off me. Let's do something.
All right. Well, you want to tell people where they can find you when they're here in the Palmer area, and if you want to throw out your social media hashtags, that way people can follow you online, because that's kind of the main way I found you, and I've been very piqued by it.
So, yeah, we are 203 Kombucha, but O as in like 0203 Kombucha. We're out here on the corner of Valley Way and Arctic, so we're 105 South Valley Way, but you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at just 203 Kombucha. We also have 203kombucha.com. If you're in Palmer, you can get it here at our place. You can go to the Ale House. We've got it at Turkey Red, at Humdinger's, at Non-Essentials. If you're in Anchorage, you can go to La Bodega. You can go to Double Shovel Cider Co. They've got it in Girdwood. They've got it. I mean, it's kind of growing more and more in the wholesale. So that's a good thing to keep your eye on that. We'll start posting some more updates on who's got it. But I encourage you to get out here for a trivia or an open mic on a Friday. Make a day out of it. If you're coming from Anchorage, visit Palmer and, you know, kind of see what we've got for a day. You can definitely fill an afternoon.
And we will post all of those links onto our show notes. And David, thank you so much for joining us and telling us about kombucha and the space that you have going on out here, and we hope to kind of follow up with you, and we'll share some of those live events that you have coming up.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.